A very good morning to all of you. 大家早晨, a very good morning. It's actually interesting. We've actually heard about the session earlier on, and there is a lot to actually cover. So this morning here, given the second session of the day, I'm actually very privileged to be given this opportunity to actually moderate this session. We have a very short time here, but very key distinguished guests. So let me just very quickly introduce each of us over here. To the far on my left, which is your right, is actually Captain Zhou. Most of you who is in Hong Kong would probably know Captain Zhou. He has been working with Hua Guang Shipping for a long time, almost 30 years, I understand. And he's the MD of Hua Guang Shipping and Transportation. Shanghai Maritime University alumni, if any of you is from Shanghai Maritime University, you can actually look for him. And he's also the Hong Kong Polytechnic University graduate as well. And he's also the Maritime Emissions Committee for BIMCO. All right, so that's Captain Zhou. And then, obviously, sitting in the middle, Martin Frugat. Morning, Martin. Martin is a distinguished figure. He spent a big chunk of his time with AP Moller. And now he's basically the CEO for Pacific Basin, and who operates and run about 300 bulk carriers, Martin, right? From Handysize to about Ultramaxes. So Ultramaxes today actually gets bigger and bigger. Martin will definitely be able to share with us later on. And last but not least, we've got our friend here from Germany, Tim Ponat, who basically flew in during over the weekend. Tim actually works for a company called NSB, who is basically the CEO of the company. He basically runs a fleet of container ships as well as tankers as well. And one of the key things that this company is currently doing is that he is actually already building methanol tankers in China altogether. So Tim is actually a very keen AI individual. And one of his interesting part is that he's a mechanic, I understand. You do actually get your hands dirty and deal with stuff altogether. All right. So the topic that we have for today, I can't see it on the screen. Oh, there we go. Yep, we have it on the screen there. It's actually about energy transition, asset preservation, basically the ships, and also potential fleet renewal. I think earlier on when we had the speech from Mr. Wang from China Merchants, we basically talk about navigating the cycles, you know, how to understand, view, and overcome the cycles that we have. I mean, depending on the sector that you are in, whether you're in the tanker, container ship, or bulk carrier, or LNG sector, each of us are actually navigating different cycles in our journey as we move along. But of course, we still cannot run away from what we call the energy transition bit that we are currently going on. Okay, so without any further ado, let me just throw in the first question here. About energy transition. We have actually heard a lot about energy transition throughout this week. And my question is actually, as we navigate the energy transition, what specific strategies are you implementing to align your fleet in the emerging environmental regulations and sustainability goals? I think earlier on, but from MSC basically mentioned a lot about regulators. Maybe I will pause the first questions to Captain Zhou. Energy transitions for your fleet in Hua Guang, what is your aspirations and the challenges that you face in the company altogether? Yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Sovan. Also, thank the Capital Link to have me here to discuss this very important topic. Yes, first of all, I believe this for the energy transition strategies, every company will be have a different strategies depend on the company's own situation, including the fleet size and the fleet ship's age and ship type, also trading patterns. In terms of Hua Guang, and we are preparing energy transition in following strategies. First of all, we are also gradually renewable of our fleet. we are keep ordering some new ships, which is far more efficient than old tonnages. And in the meantime, we are selling some old tonnages. Although we have ordered several ships, take over 4 new building ships last year, actually our owner sector, the fleet size remain relatively stable as we are keep selling the old tonnages. And yes, when we order new building vessels, definitely we will going to apply the latest technology as much as possible. And in terms of our new LNG carriers, of course, we apply, this is automatically will be burn the new fuels, LNG as the new fuels. But when we order the Ultramax bulk carrier, which is in that sector, I think is less matured to apply any new fuels at this moment, we allow some flexibilities to retrofit in the future. In the meantime, we add energy saving devices and help shipyard to modify design to try using today's available technologies to improve ships' efficiencies as much as possible. So actually, for our new design ships last year we took over, we achieved more than EEDI-3 the standard, which is well in advance to the regulations. In the meantime, we also apply the smart technologies, try to help captain, help chief engineer to, in operational level, to optimize the fuel management on board. This, we believe, is some low-hanging fruit we are applying. Of course, for the existing ships, we also apply the fuel-saving advices during every dry docking. Particularly, we also apply the full blasting of the hull condition, ship's hull at every dry docking. Then apply high-efficiency paint. We found this type of measures is very effective. We are well convinced in today's market it's really achieving the fuel efficiencies and carbon reductions. In the meantime, of course, we have in our company, we have a technical committee. We are keep collecting the information, latest information in terms of technologies, in terms of new fuels, and to see where we can apply when there's a business cases. So that is, of course, in the meantime, we also give a lot of education to our staff, particularly the shore staff and sea staffs, to change their mindset, how to optimize the fuel savings at the daily operations. So this is what we are doing today. Of course, as I mentioned, we have a technical committee. We are monitoring regulations. We are monitoring technologies. We will take actions as and when there is a situation arise and commercially makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Captain Zhou. I think it's going to be a challenge as well, right? I mean, especially when you have a fleet of about 90 vessels, different ship types as well. I mean, you operate gas carrier, as you mentioned, tankers as well as bulk carriers. So it will be good to actually come back here in the next 6 months, 12 months, and let us know how is the energy devices actually coming along, energy-saving devices, ESD. Right. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's good.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Right. Let's move into bulk carriers. Martin, 300 bulk carriers.
Yep.
Handy sizes to Ultramaxes.
Yep.
How are you actually handling the sustainability part, the energy transition part, when you have such a huge fleet in your profile? Can you share with us, please?
Yes, of course.
Yep.
I think sometimes having a big fleet is an advantage in the sense that you might have a little bit more resources to invest in it, and maybe a little bit more insight, knowledge about things. So I think we benefit from that part, that's for sure. So we partly do a little bit the same like I think everybody else is doing. We are selling out of our older ships and buying newer second-hand ships. That's, of course, an advantage. We have said from the beginning that we will not invest in new buildings unless they're dual fuel, and we still stick to that. But we have then taken Japanese time charter deals with purchase options, a number of those ships as well. And we can see when you look at a Handysize today, it's a 42,000 deadweight we are selling 28,000 deadweight, so it's actually a 50% better ship just on the size of it. And the fuel consumption on the new ships are actually better than the old ones, so a huge difference in that. We are painting all our ships with silicone paint. There's pluses and minuses to that, but definitely it has a saving to it. The trade of bulk carrier sometimes demands that you touch bottom somewhere. That's not very good on silicone, but all in all, we still think that's a good investment to do. We do evaluate all options from bubbles to sails to rotor sails and all kinds of things. I think our conclusion is that the cost of these things on a bulk carrier today is too much. It's probably better for us to invest in new buildings, new ships. We get a lot more out of that. So a dollar spent on that for a bulk carrier at least is better. We have looked at rebuilding all our ships. Can we retrofit them to go on dual fuel? It's impossible today. The engine types, there's not enough space to put in new fuel circulation in those ships. So for us, it's also about the optimization of the ships. 90% of the time, we have cargo on board our ships. So it's a very efficient way, actually, on smaller dry cargo ships to run them. And we invest a lot in data and data collection, data storage, because we can see that if we run them in the right way, just in time arrival, there's a lot of money in it, for a lot of savings, actually, on that part. We look at some of the bigger ports that we know we call often. We talk to the shippers, exporters, if we can do shore power. We spend a lot of time, we are geared ships, we spend a lot of time in port. Is there any way we can get the power from shore? And we tell them we like to invest in it if we can get them to do it, and we make sure our ships are able to connect to shore. And then, of course, we have new building projects, but we maybe come back to that in the discussion.
Okay, thanks very much, Martin. So it's Silicon Pen, invest in new building, shore power. I think new building, it's going to be a challenge. I think most of you basically know a lot of the ships that are currently in the water now. If you can remember, some of you, if I'm looking in the faces in the room, those, during the very, very high time, 2006, 7 and 8, a lot of the vessels are actually built during those times, especially bulk carriers, right? And those are probably not the most efficient vessel around, and they are actually coming up to about 15 years old, 16 years old. So at some point, when you are on the 18, 20 years old, or maybe you can operate up to 25 years old, this ship will more or less will be a big challenge for them, you know, to satisfy the EU ETS, fuel EU requirement. So I think that time there will be a massive amount of ordering. That's what we thought. But of course, the biggest challenge there, of course, is looking for shipyards who actually have the slots capability to be able to build these vessels. I mean, I'm based in Shanghai, and looking at the new construction of ships, and basically, you know, most of the shipyards are actually taking up orders from the bigger vessels like the container ships, LNGs, and also tankers. But bulk carriers are actually struggling at the moment, and the slots availability is 2027, 2028. Yeah, so that's where we are.
It's good news.
All right.
That's
yeah.
Good news.
Yeah. All right. Okay, Tim. What is your strategy then for your fleet of container ships and tankers as well, as we understand that you are currently already embarking on new building of methanol tankers in China? Maybe you can share with us NSB strategies.
Yes, of course. So for us, it's a little bit more different as we are managers as such, integrated partners for our owners. And so we need to be more flexible in our approach, because I have not the luxury being an owner and running the strategy for the whole fleet I have. I have various owners. There are liners. There are finance investors. And there are private investors. So, and they all have different strategies and different access to the market. And saying this, we need to have, or for our organization, we cannot have one-size-fits-all solution. So we need to see what meets the expectations of our clients. And in general, we have looked into anything, any retrofits over the last years. It was said it can be the paint, it can be the bow, it can be bubble, it can be even widening what we did a few years back. So And then on the other side, you have, of course, the new build. So it's we see that depending on the market, and at the end, we all need to earn money. Depending on the market, the owners are willing to invest more in asset preservation or in new builds. And with the current regulation kicking in, and we have heard this on the previous panel, there are, of course, good things about it, and there are bad things about it, and we, of course, need to do things. That's out of question. We see the willingness to invest in an asset preservation, for example, as well for one of our clients, and the fleet is aging, but the market is so attractive, and the consequences, especially in Europe on EU fuel maritime, are so huge, so that the payback on asset preservation and on retrofit is a total different ballgame nowadays than in the past, and I think this is accelerating these initiatives. And as you mentioned on the new build, yes, we have, of course, the other side. And if you're a cargo owner, as Mr. Grimaldi said and as Bud said, you have, of course, a different playground in employing the vessels over time. And as it's a long-term strategy, they look different into the asset than financial investors, which have a usually far shorter investment period. So, and as you mentioned, yes, we have two methanol tankers under construction in China and for an Asian owner. And this is, of course, a very interesting project for us as such. And as the vessel will transport methanol, it's obvious that as long as they burn up the whole cargo, that they use it as well for propulsion.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. I think just on that point, right, you mentioned about asset preservation. I mean, would you be looking at ordering more ships? And what do you see are some of the challenges that you are currently facing? I mean, for the fleet that you are actually working on now, in terms of ordering more vessels in the near future?
We are looking into various projects together with our owners. At the very moment, if you're looking into especially the tanker segment and the container segment, the prices are, of course, on the new building side, very, very high. You just mentioned that the slots are not by today. So how does the market develop over time? So, and we know as well in the container segment that geopolitical tensions we currently see are funneling the rates. So, and what do we expect in the near future on, let's say, Red Sea situation? Red Sea is absorbing 6 to 8% of the tonnage. So if this does not maintain as it is, what does it mean for the market? So, and this is one. And the other thing, when we talk to owners, what is the fuel of the future? And we are all in this business for very long, and myself, I'm a technician, so we have no doubt about technology. Technology is there or is under development, and there are risks attached to the technologies, some of the fuels more than the others, but I think the history has shown that we are managing these technologies well. But as Mr. Grimaldi said, it's a long-term investment, and we see that our counterparts, our owners, are currently struggling on making the final decision. So this methanol project, this is a good step in the right direction, but it's as well driven by the cargo the vessel will carry. We see LNG, which is all call it a transition fuel, but we see the willingness to invest in this. But other than that, for the people we are talking to, our clients, they are currently, and sad as it is, looking more in conventional fuels because they don't see the availability of the other fuels in the amount we need it. But nevertheless, modern ships, of course, are consuming far less than the current tonnage.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Tim. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom that you've actually provided there. But of course, we are actually navigating in a very uncertain world. And especially, you know, new building orders is one of the way to actually do it. Retrofitting your vessel definitely is one of them as well. Maybe we can actually hear from Martin. You mentioned about, you know, asset preservation earlier on. May I know, you know, just asking if I can just combine, you know, asset preservation as well as future proving your existing fleets, because it's actually not easy, and the size of your vessel has restrictions in terms of what you can actually put on board. You can actually do a lot probably on your external hull. So how are you actually navigating this to actually future proving some of your ships that you have in your fleet?
Yeah, that's a good question and a very difficult thing. I think the challenge we have is that when we sell older ships and buy a modern second-hand ship, and maybe it's 5 years old, you still have 20 years left, or maybe even more. And I think that's where we are concerned about the residual value of the ships. It's when you buy a small bulk carrier, rebuilding it and fantasizing that you're going to do a lot of extra investment in it, it's probably not realistic. So for us, sometimes it's also a little bit of a dangerous strategy to take to buy too many modern secondhand based on traditional propulsion technology in it. Of course, we are considering that. We don't think the world will ask us to scrap all the old ships in it, but we think there will be a tough, maybe more duel or markets between older and more modern ships in it. We are actually, in many ways, we talk a lot about uncertainties on fuels. We are actually quite positive about the markets, the world, the need for transportation. It will grow. Right? So in many ways, we have a very positive view on the future. Anything in shipping, you always have to take a risk. We've done that for years and years and years. You take a risk in buying the ship at a certain price. We will also have to take a risk on some of the propulsion systems and so on. And we have had a project in Japan for some years, looking at what would be the most optimal fuel on smaller bulk carriers. Which does actually add a little bit of complexity to it. And of course, we have looked at the CapEx, we looked at the OPEX, and of course, we looked at the fuel prices in it. And I think our conclusion is to dream about a world on ammonia on an Ultramax is probably not really realistic when you think about the cost of the CapEx to put it on. And put LNG on an Ultramax is probably not really realistic either. Maybe in 10, 15 years, but not now. So we came down to methanol. It's probably the only realistic thing for smaller bulk carrier. That's the project we are working on, and we'll have to see. We have probably hoped in those years that IMO and others maybe have come to a conclusion and told us how they're going to regulate these things, because that would have helped us a lot. We are very much in agreement that a fee on the CO2 would be very helpful. We are in many ways actually quite positive about EU. You can discuss. There's always complaints afterwards when they come with something. But finally, somebody, we know the rules. We can actually calculate those rules, and we can do investments around those rules, whether we like them or not. And that has actually helped us in our projects. We hope IMO will come out with something similar. And it's super difficult, of course, to make rules that goes from a handy size to a cape size just in our own segment. But look at LNGs and 24,000 TEU container ships. It is not an easy task for IMO or anybody else to come up with that. But we hope in, I think it's March, the meet again, that we'll get some new news on that part. But we actually see as this is finally also an opportunity in our segment, which is very commoditized, to actually take some decisions that might actually strategically be very good for us in the future. So we see this as a positive thing, that world is growing, the demand for transportation will grow. And here, finally, we have something that might create a differentiated value proposition for those who might take an early decision in it. So we are not that negative about it. We actually think it's the right thing. And we think it's very important. We have to decarbonize. We shouldn't discuss that at all. That has to be done. And I think in the lifetime of a ship, that if we buy a ship today, we will get delivery in 28. It will live for 25 years. It's 2053. Huh? I don't think anybody can dream that we will not have to decarbonize that ship within the lifetime of the ship. So we might as well just do it from the beginning. And I do actually also hope that governments and IMO and others will help us a little bit on that journey.
Okay, absolutely. Thanks very much, Martin. I think for methanol ship, you probably need a bigger bunker tank as well, right? on the vessel itself, and yes, finding space could be a bit of a challenge.
It's probably not going to be the most beautiful ship. Not offending Mr. Grimaldi, but it will look like a partly like a car carrier on that part. No, it's not going to be a very beautiful ship, but that's what it has to do.
Absolutely. Okay, just turning slightly, in view of the time, we talk about ships, you know, energy transition, different fuel, ordering of new ships, different technologies. But all of us here, I guess, in one way or another, are related to the I call them the asset of our assets, which are basically our crew. I mean, how many captains do we have in the room, sitting in the room here? How many captains can we see? Show of hands. Captains? Yep. Yeah, there are a few captains here. Chief engineers? Oh, many chief engineers. So the next topic I want to touch on is basically crew. You know, it's we all know that there's a lot of new technologies, very advanced. We even talk about ammonia. So I will probably pose this question to Captain Zhou. You are doing some new buildings that you have and different ship types. And how are you actually addressing the crew training part and to ensure that the crew is well equipped to operate some of these vessels? And perhaps, you know, one of the points that was being mentioned, how do you encourage them, the crew, to actually go on board on some of these new alternative fuel vessels? And how is your company actually doing it? Yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Sovan. Yeah, first of all, I cannot agree more. We say our crew is for the shipping company, is the most important asset. So we pay a lot of focus on the crew training, traditional crew training, plus now, because in order to meet new regulations, new technology, we need advanced training to crew. In terms of traditional training, we have the corporate university program. We recruit cadets. For example, we recruit cadets jointly with the Shandong Jiao Tong universities. Every year we have 120 students join the university as a year one student. Then we jointly educate this cadet, this student. After their graduation, there's a Wagwan class. There they will join Wagwan ship as soon as they pass the examination, get the COC certifications. And we do similar project with another college in Shandong called Shandong Qingdao Harbor Vocational and Technical Colleges. There are 8 students. So totally, actually, we are supporting 200 students every year in Shandong, one university, one college, to keep supplying the cadets to our fleet. In the meantime, we also run a liquid cargo training center, also jointly with the Shandong Jiao Tong universities. This training center provided a liquid cargo trainings specialized for the gas carriers, tankers, chemical tankers. So basically, it is also help us to train those crews is able to serve on the specialized ships, including the new fuel ships. Basically, they can train them, and they also help them to get a certificate issued by the MSA. And also, thanks our the third-party businesses, as Sovan mentioned, we are currently managing more than 90 ships, which included the gas carriers, including oil tankers, including bulk carriers. So this gives us a unique advantages to train up crew within our fleet for the new fuels, in terms of LNG fuels, in terms of methanol fuels, because we have a chemical tankers fleet, we have gas fleet. Our gas crew trained on board our gas fleet is able to easily to transfer to the LNG fueled ships. Same for the methanol bunker. In the meantime, we already manage the LNG bunkering ships in Shanghai port. These are all very important resources for us to support the crew trainings. And Sovan also mentioned it's a very important topic. It's how to attract this crew to the onboard ships. That's also very important that our corporate university programs is a very important role. We regularly send our captains to the class. Yeah. to give the lectures. We invited the industrial experts. We use our resources. We use our connections to send the class, give lectures to these students, help them to force their passion to the sea. We found it's quite effective, and for the program in the universities, they tended to have high ratio to pass examination, high ratio to join the sea compared to the normal class. Thank you.
Excellent. That's very good. So Shantung area is where you actually procure. Yes. Okay. I not the time that we have. A very quick one from you, Tim, perhaps from your company about crewing.
I just can repeat what Captain Jin Feng said. So we have our credit programs as well, and we have our own training simulator for our nautical seafarers. But what comes in place now with the new fuels is, of course, we are currently working on the manual for methanol, right? So we are not that far down the road that we are already training our crews on that, because the deliveries are in 2 years' time. But we need, of course, to prepare ourselves for these new technologies, what it means to operate with these new fuels. And in parallel, we, of course, need to set up the training programs for the crews as such. But other than that, I just can confirm that there's far more we need to do to attract new seafarers for all the business than just training, right? It's the overall conditions we provide them, length of contract, education is one. Then, of course, we have well-being and how are they connected to the corporation. So that's the key. But okay. I do not want to overrun the time.
All right. Okay, good. Thank you very much, Tim. Simulator is a very important thing. There's something different. And Martin, yep.
So we have 4,000 crew members and we are dry cargo. And I would say if we did ammonia, I would be a little bit worried about the training, but I don't think we're going to do that. I think in general, our ship managers, and we have here in Hong Kong so many ship managers and a big collection of qualified people who knows how to do these things. I'm not so worried actually about training the crew, for instance, for methanol and so on. Of course, it's a task. My issues with the crew is probably more the, can I secure the safety of our crew around the world? I still have 10 people sitting in Nigeria, innocent, accused of drug smuggling from South America. They've been there now for 2 years. There's a 24-year-old cadet on our ship. He was 5 months on the ship, and now he's 2 years in Nigeria. And I think I can see ICS is here, and we got good help from a lot around. But I think people ignore that. That's why young people don't want to go to sea, because we can't even guarantee them the safety and maybe also a fair legal trial around the world. And it's a huge issue on the ships. And we feel that every day. I've been CEO of Pacific Basin for nearly 4 years. I think all those 4 years I've had somebody in jail, innocent, around the world, accused of some drug smuggling because somebody uses drugs parts of the world and other they smuggle it out using the ships. And I have much more issue. I think we should take that much more seriously. I think the training part of it, of course, we do that. We've done it before. We'll do it again. Of course, we will.
Thank you very much, Martin. I think we all feel for you. That's why today's topic, even though we are talking about fleet renewal and everything else, I just want to touch on the part on crew, because it's so absolutely essential for all of us. And they are basically the blood live stream for all of us here. So yeah, thank you very much, gentlemen, for sharing that with us. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. Thank you.